You're listening to the PR Wind Down Podcast, the show for public relations professionals who are ready to see real change in the PR industry. We are your hosts, April White and Laura Schooler. Let's get ready to wind down.
You ready to kick things off, Laura?
Yes, I am, April.
How's your week?
Oh, it's so wonderful. How's your week?
Good so far. I mean, you know, getting started.
How's the store?
The store is good. I'm finally hiring somebody for the weekends. So I'll only work there on Fridays while I'm working on trust stuff.
Right.
It's like my no video call day. So it's
Did you make that for the whole agency that you were going to?
Yeah.
You did? You made Fridays no video? Have meetings, but just audio.
Yes.
And how did everybody take that?
They're very excited.
Did you get any specific feedback or was everybody just like, yay?
They were like, if we want to do a video call, can we? I was like, yes, if you want to. I'm trying to give you a pass here, but
right.
They're like, so we could do a video. I was like, you can. It's not like you're forbidden. It's like a benefit, not like a sentence, you know? It was very funny. So I was like, yeah, you can. I'm not going to, but you
can. That's good. So there you go. There's a little perk that doesn't cost you anything.
Exactly. Laura, do you want to kick things off with things I should have been trained on?
Yes. How do you push back on client expectations? And maybe there's two branches here. When they're like really too high, like, hi, we just started this week. Why aren't I in the New York Times? Or weird expectations. I don't really mean like bizarre weird. I mean more like maybe overwhelming, like sort of like a recent call where somebody was like, hey, I hired this firm and they only got me, 12 hits. And we were both like, well, that seems pretty good to me. Like, expectations where they're like, we want to have, 30 stories by the end of the month and that kind of thing. Like, how do you push back on that kind of thing? So one is a single achievement that's just very hard to get. And another is like a volume achievement that unless you're dealing with like some, massive company that gets media coverage because, so they open their mouth. How do you deal with that?
Carefully. And with, I think, as many examples and case studies as possible. So usually for me, it goes the best if I can say, just as an example, when we started with company B, they were in the similar situation to you, and it took 6 months to lay the foundational groundwork. And month seven, we got them in Inc. Magazine, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Business Insider. But it took, like, if you can kind of show them a parallel example to explain why it took that. And or give them a horror story of, okay, well, we tried to do this for one other company and it looked like this, or it was not strategic in this way and I don't want to do that again. But I don't think that's dicey because then you're also undermining your credibility. So I think the better thing to do is just as best you can give them an example of where where you did exactly what they're asking for, but it took a different time frame than they're proposing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or like, okay, we can get you on Oprah, but not until you have this kind of celebrity. We need this amount of product giveaway. We need this kind of a social cost, whatever it is that you need, right, to make it happen. And I think the more you give them those examples, the better. So we had a client recently that, and also sometimes you just have to tell them, you have to do a reality check. So we had a client recently who said, well, I want to get this product feature that we announced a year ago, top tier coverage now. And we said, well, it's not new anymore. So they're not going to think it's news. And, oh, I really feel like we should be able to get top tier coverage for this thing. And one of the team members said politely, we can feel a lot of things, but doesn't change the media landscape, and right. it doesn't change what they're going to find compelling. And so given that we can't change that, we do need to shift something on our side to make it compelling. So it could be a case study, it could be XYZ, and they, you know, more data, research, et cetera, to make it fresh, but we can't just take the old news and get it in top tier press. And so it wasn't accepted well as feedback, right? So then you do, when you get that direct, you do risk that the client goes away mm-hmm. because they're stubborn and they think somehow brute forcing it is going to get you your way with the press.
Right.
And every once in a blue moon, you know, if somebody sprays and prays, they do get some kind of benefit from it.
Right.
If they do that approach, but it's not sustainable because, right. yeah, sure, you got the hit, but you also, how many hundreds of other reporters did you right. piss off in the process who have just blocked?
And how much time did you spend doing that?
Emails.
Right. Right.
You know, like you just got, okay, so you were sent to the spam box of 50 reporters that matter to you that will mm-hmm. never now see another email, but you mm-hmm. got that one hit for that one press release. Congrats, you know? So I think it's some of just being direct and polite and some giving examples of what would work or what, you know, has worked in the past.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
that's my best answer. What do you think? Anything to build on that with?
I think that that sounded like the toughest type of scenario, what you just explained.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah. Then I think that there are a lot of situations where they just don't understand. And when you explain and show them, then they're sort of like, oh, you know, when you explain like what a press release is and why you do or don't use it and how much it costs and all of those things. And they say, oh, and if you explain, there's something different that's called a pitch that can have the same effect with a lot less visibility, a lot less cost, mm-hmm. a lot less approvals, or maybe a media alert, or there's different ways to try to get the same result. Because mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of clients are like, press release, let's put a press release, let's put out 20 press releases, because that's all they know about PR. So they know just enough to be very dangerous. Mm-hmm. So if you really educate them, and hopefully they are open enough to that, since they did hire you to be the counselor on this, like, would you tell your yeah. lawyer how to do the law? Same kind of thing. And I think there's a good number of clients who will listen to you, some more easily and quickly than others, but usually they will, especially if you start to get some traction and then they say, oh, okay, they know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But then yeah. you'll have those like the one that you just explained.
And then, you know, yeah, and they did give us notice not long after that, because I don't think that they wanted our expert counsel. And I mean, but then again, do you want to work with a client that doesn't respect your senior counsel and thinks that brute forcing the media is a legitimate tactic? So,
right. It's
no,
almost
no.
like
the answer
right.
is no.
Right. And like, you know, it's going to happen with the next PR firm. You
but
know?
Of course. No. And they're going to do the same thing over. And I mean, it's exactly why.
And then they're the kinds of people who say, oh, PR firms stink. I hate working with PR firms. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Well, we could have helped you, you know?
Yeah. If you just listen.
And the irony is, meantime, now that the client's on the way out, and they were so mean, I mean, they were actually abusive to the team. And now that they're out the door, or on their way out, I should say, the team has been so happy they're leaving that they're just getting them opportunities.
Right.
They're like,
it's so interesting how that happens.
Bye bye.
Yeah. It's interesting how that happens. Cause
they
like,
just like loosened up and like,
right. It's
like,
so hard to
I
work
on care
under
anymore.
That.
Yeah. The
yeah.
tyranny.
Yes. Yeah. And then people are way better workers when they don't have tyranny.
100%. Yeah. So suddenly the team is just like, they're just crushing.
Right.
You know?
I mean, that's clients or, you know, your boss at work. Once you know you're leaving, you're like, ooh, and then you're like the best employee ever. So yeah, people who are either bosses or clients who are paying should keep that in mind. Like putting weird high pressure on people about anything, but especially things that you're not expert in, is backfires.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, with that, should we move on to, wait, do I have our guest in a minute? Oh, here's David.
Okay. Yeah. Let him
okay.
in.
Okay, cool.
Hi, Laura. Hi, April. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm better now that you're both here.
So nice to meet you.
Hello, everybody. Today we've got David Cicirelli. He is the co-founder and CEO of Voices.com, a company that focuses on connecting top-level voice talent with businesses in need of voice services. A lover of music and sounds, David is an audio engineer who specializes in voice-over services. Welcome, David.
All right. Great. Thanks, Laura. Thanks, April. Great to be here with you both.
Yeah. So we are super excited. I know we were chatting a bit about some of the topics we wanted to get into, but I'd love to first kick off with this topic you mentioned about how to develop your brand voice.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, audio is one of those channels that I think is often overlooked. It's not as glamorous or sexy as video, but I think we've recognizing, and I think a lot of marketers are recognizing, the world's awash in video for social media and online ads. And fact is, 30%, or call it a third of the world's population, learns best by listening. And we call these, of course, auditory learners. I would consider myself one of these. I have 500 audiobooks on my phone. I listen to podcasts all the time. And really, if there's an opportunity to listen, I would always opt to do so. So I think marketers are you know, kind of tuning in to this fact. And then the question might, you know, begin, well, what channels should I, you know, should I kind of select? What is the content even going to be? And what does our brand actually sound like? And this is a question that a lot of organizations have thought about their visual identity, but not considered what do they sound like. And so an exercise we often advise our clients to do is imagine the audience you're trying to reach. If they were to walk into a room, what do they look like? What are they wearing? What music is going on in the background? What's the setting? And that's probably a reflection of who you're trying to reach, and therefore your brand should probably sound like them. I mean, this is something we've learned through research as well, and probably common knowledge at this point, that people buy from people who not only look like them, but also sound like them. So the shortcut, if you will, April, is I'll give you what I call a heuristic of these most popular vocal archetypes, right? These kind of these voices, because voice is hard to describe. We've really heard some quite hilarious artistic direction from sound taller, whatever that means, to sound more purple. But really what I think, you know, organizations are looking for is they lack a lexicon, right? They lack the words to describe what their organization might sound like. So after 500,000 jobs that have been posted from organizations of all sizes, we've kind of boiled it down to these three vocal archetypes that we see kind of being posted over and over and over. The first one is the trusted narrator. Think of the Morgan Freemans, the Sam Elliott, the James Earl Jones, maybe Oprah or Kate Blanchett. And this is the role, you know, can be the announcer, but the style is very authoritative, very deep, inspirational, maybe intellectual, if you will, but definitely trustworthy. And then, so that's the trusted narrator. Then we have the approachable expert. This is the guy or gal next door who's always kind of up on the latest pop culture. They know the sports scores. They know all the feature of the latest iPhone. And they're certainly approachable. They're authentic. They're very conversational. And you can approach them. Why we call them the approachable experts, you can ask them questions. There's no silly questions. And they'd love to kind of share this information with you. A little bit of the, yeah, come here. I got to tell you the latest thing. They almost want to share. So that's the approachable expert. And then the last one would be the international guide. So this would be the, you know, Nicole Kidman, Trevor Noah, Keira Knightley, Hugh Jackman, if you will. The role of the guide or teacher, a historian, scientist, maybe a flight attendant, someone who's there and going to walk alongside you, and they can be charismatic and enchanting, maybe a little bit luxurious or even romantic, but they're going to be perhaps great for a luxury brand or, you know, some exotic tour or somewhere. And they're going to walk alongside you as the customer and teach you and show you how to engage, how to get the most of that experience. So if you're looking to create a voice and find some defining characteristics for your organization's brand voice across advertisements, across maybe your phone system and other touch points, remember those three: the trusted narrator, the approachable expert, and the international guide.
I love that. So which one am I?
Well, who do you, which one resonates most with you?
I feel like Laura would be better at answering this than me.
You're like the fun best friend. Is that one?
Yeah, the approachable expert. It's funny. You know, we call the role the guy or girl next door. It's somebody who just, you know, you would kind of cross ways. They would say hello to you in the hallway. There's just a willingness to share information. So that one, it sounds like you there, April.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, interesting. This is so interesting. And so brands basically would fall into one of these categories and be looking for voiceover experts and actors that embody that brand identity.
Is exactly. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, you should, just like you would have maybe a visual brand style guide, what we see is a lot of brands actually creating audio branding guidelines, which even define the type of music, you know, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, everything from the genre of the music to like the pace and tempo, as well as the vocal qualities, because it's not always one person that's actually hiring a voice talent, especially in large organizations. They might have a dozen video producers, maybe even e-learning or curriculum designers that also hire voice talent. You know, brands are actually documenting what their audio brand sounds like. You know, just to tie this up, it's because there's such a lack of language around sound that, you know good quality voiceover and sound and maybe music that you like, but it's actually really hard to describe it. You know when you hear it, but it's hard to describe. So that's the benefit of putting this down in writing.
It's really interesting. Did you know, I just heard that there was a brand that was doing an audio logo.
Absolutely.
I never heard of that before.
Yeah, audio logo, sound logo. Absolutely. Think of these as your kind of 3 to 5 note kind of sonic signature, if you will. So the bigger picture is the sonic brand. That's the unique soundscape that drives home the tone and the personality of your brand across all the touch points, and it covers music, voice, maybe some distinct sound effects. But the sound logo is probably what most people would immediately identify with. It's like when you boot up Netflix, there's that chime. You're like, okay, I'm in for, you know, for a deep dive on watching Netflix. The you know, few musical chime when you turn on your Mac. I mean, there's lots of examples of these.
There's been articles in the New York Times about different subway sounds, right? And that there was some contest to like change the sounds on the New York City subway. And you don't even realize it until like somebody isolates it. You're like, oh my God, that I do hear that all the time, right?
There was a study done a while back to estimate how many voices we hear in a day. And it's somewhere around 100 to 150, which is, I mean, listen, there's three of us here talking. Maybe you're in other meetings. Maybe you're, again, listening to podcasts on the radio, all kinds of advertisements as well, too. So we're definitely accustomed to hearing voice. We know when it's done well. We know when it's done poorly. But these sonic logos are just another opportunity to distinguish a brand, which the history is, you know, jingles and kind of going back that far when they were kind of sing-songy, if you will. I think that might seem a little bit passé nowadays, where it's more around if you call in or maybe using a smart speaker and you kind of boot up an experience or launch software or otherwise, you know, kiosks at airports or kind of anytime you can and there's a speaker, there's an opportunity to brand your organization with that added familiarity and comfort with sound.
And so do the overall brand archetypes when it comes to audio branding fall into the same four categories as the voiceover, or are there additional archetypes?
We haven't got that far. Voiceover were the ones that we talked about earlier, the trusted narrator and the approachable expert and the international guide. I think around there, I could imagine that there would be a complementary set of sounds that would be familiar, for instance, with the international guide. Maybe again, a lot of travel sounds, maybe it's a train or an airplane or those kind of chimes, whereas the announcer, you know, probably it's a lot drier. Again, depending on your organization, maybe it's birds or animals. I mean, think the National Geographic type sounds. But, you know, the use of sound overall is something that we're seeing more than just picking some stock music and having, you know, lovely Betty from accounting who can do the voiceover for your phone system. Organizations are thinking more deeply about how do we leverage audio as a channel and help tell our story in a more consistent way.
I like it. Perfect. Well, let me ask you, we have two classic questions that we're going to ask before we let you go. One is, do you have any questions for us?
I would love to hear, when was the last time you feel like you heard a commercial on a podcast, an advertisement on a podcast, and did that inspire you to actually go out and buy something?
That's a good question. I don't know if it's a podcast as much as I get clips of TV shows on YouTube. Like every morning, I get on YouTube and it'll be like you know, Jimmy Fallon show or Jimmy Kimmel or whatever, and it'll show, or, you know, Bill Maher, et cetera. And I will, they, you know, they show the ad and it goes, you have to sit through the first 5 seconds, and I click it off as soon as I can. So I never do anything.
So you want to skip it. You want to skip it.
100%. But I'm not willing to pay to not have it advertised.
And how about, thanks, Laura. How about you, April? Was there ever an ad you heard that inspired you to actually go and make a purchase?
I don't know if the team did, but I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I think they were advertising, I think it was called ZipRecruiter.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, we might need that, actually. You think I need that? My cat thinks I need that. So I actually sent it to the team because there was a percentage off if you used a certain code. And I backed it up to write down the code, and then I sent it in Slack to the operations team. And I said, I don't know if you guys want to use this, but there's a, you know, a code right now.
Pretty cool. I mean, it's definitely one of those awareness. I mean, it's pretty hard to target listeners like that, but I think that's something, you know, we certainly see. How about, would you say an advertisement on a podcast is best read and builds most trust if it's read by the host, or if it's a highly produced advertisement by the brand itself?
I can answer that first. Joe Rogan reads, and Howard Stern used to, or maybe he still does, read ads.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Kay on the Yes Network for Yankees will read ads too. And I just find it kind of weird because, you know, they're just being paid to do it.
Right. Yet,
but
is there a bit of a
way? Because it's part of the show.
Yes. And you also don't know it's coming, right? Because it's like, oh, is this, and it's harder to skip those ads with the plus 15 seconds.
Correct.
Because you're like, I still hear the voice, and then you rewind. There is this almost like halo effect where I think organizations want to leverage the authority and the trustworthiness of that host to then impact their listeners as well, too, as if they're more likely to listen to the host. I don't know, April, do you have a preference? Thanks, Laura.
I think I actually prefer when the hosts read it themselves. I think there's more a continuity to it, and I think it's not as abrasive or jarring when it happens. I mean, it does make you feel like, oh, we're suddenly talking about jewelry for Mother's Day, or, you know, why, what just happened? But then you realize and you think, okay, just, I'm going to tune out until he starts talking about, or she starts talking about something, you know, I care about again.
That reminds me of something that's hilarious. Like, again, another Yankees reference on The Fan. Susan Waldman, she's, you know, this like older woman who's been doing the Yankees games forever with John Sterling. And she'll be like, she'll like make something that she's saying like, wow, like he really ran fast to second base. And speaking of running fast, you should run fast to the tire store. And like, she like tries, it's like so old school to me, but I guess radio is still sort of old school that way.
Yeah. Yeah. You almost got to be listening constantly for the perfect spot to like insert the ad.
Right.
Yeah. The reason I bring that up, we actually just did a 2022 podcast advertising report and found that actually that was the preference. The perfect ad, so to speak, was the live read ad by the host. And it's related to the podcast content as well too. So I'm not sure if, you know, Yankees fans and tires, you know, the tire store kind of fits together, but isn't everybody in New York a Yankees fan? So maybe it does. But those are the two things that it really needed to be live read by the host and related to the actual show content.
Got it. All right. Well, last question. Well, two-part question for you. Anything we didn't ask you that we should have, and where can people find you?
Sure. They might be one and the same. You know, in a nutshell, voices.com is the place to go. It's an online marketplace for freelance voice talent. And whether it's a podcast or an ad or updating that phone system or maybe creating a video, that's a great place. Freelance marketplace that you can hire those pros. And to reach me personally, probably the best is find me on LinkedIn. It's David Cicerelli on LinkedIn, and I love to connect that way.
Amazing. Thank you so much, David.
Wait, that's I have one great. Last question.
Sure.
She broke my promise.
How much do you pay your talent, and can April and I get in the mix?
Sure. Well, the talent, actually all the talent set their own prices. So we do run surveys every year to actually publish a rate guide that really just gives talent a ballpark.
What is that ballpark?
It really starts at, you know, $100 for like a 15-second voicemail, all the way up to tens of thousands for larger national advertising campaigns. Right. It's at voices.com/rates. It actually was the number one most frequently asked question. How much do I charge? So the talent were curious, how much do they charge? And then likewise, the clients, how much does it cost?
Right.
We figured we would publish that survey and create a downloadable PDF and web page that's easily accessible that tries to go and answer.
So I think April and I will be quite giving and go in between those numbers and charge $5,000.
There you go. That's fair. $5,000.
Laura's plotting out her next career.
I should have been doing it all along, but you know, better late than never.
Yeah. Well, you have the equipment, you have the personality, and I'm sure the clients as well too. So those are usually the three hardest things to pull together. It's certainly a lot more than just talking into a microphone.
Right.
It's reading the script and bringing these words to life. And that's probably something that you're familiar with doing as well.
Is my equipment the microphone or?
Microphone, headphone, recording software. And generally, you know, that it's funny because the advice, I mean, I'm a trained audio engineer. That's actually what I went to school for. And the advice I often get is before the microphone, before, you know, some fancy mixing console, it's actually a quiet room. And soundproofing a room will do a world of difference in the actual sound, because that allows you to edit it and manipulate it much easier after the fact.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you love Rode microphones?
Oh, Rodes are great. That's look at this. You have a that
April
sticker.
April got it for me and I saved
well, excellent.
Sticker.
She has props for everything. I can't believe you have that sticker at your fingertips.
I have a wall of crazy.
She was ready for it.
She's always ready for it. I never know how this happens.
All
awesome.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, David, for joining. We really appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks so much. And we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting.
I don't think I ever really thought about that actively in that way.
Might be the big money maker.
You're going to sign up, aren't you?
You should.
I thought that was fascinating. I had no idea there were like archetypes behind brand audio.
Well, if you think of like James Earl Jones, right?
Branding.
Like, I mean, there are voices that you hear in so many commercials, and it's because they're so authoritative and recognizable. So I have thought about it, and I've read it like about not just voices, but like, you know, sounds that are used, like I was saying in the subway. So it's something, and I know a guy I used to work with who like deals in a company who does this kind of thing too. It just is not as prevalent, right? You don't hear about it a whole lot. That's why it's our big chance to get in and make the big bucks.
All right, let's do it. Signing up tonight.
Okay, so you want to talk about some recent PR news of the week?
Yes, please.
So the whole Johnny Depp Amber Heard is ongoing. I've listened to quite a bit of it. But the thing that I found kind of interesting was that she fired her PR firm.
Yeah.
Because I think it was before she took the stand, though, or about the time when she took the stand, because he was clear. I mean, he's clearly getting like worldwide support and people are slamming her. So I don't know. Is this a function of a PR firm who, you know, wasn't reading the tea leaves and seeing the future? Or is this the function of a client who's blaming it all on the PR firm when the PR firm could have done nothing to stop this avalanche of support for, you know, one of the world's most known actors?
It's such a good question. It's hard to imagine that it's all the PR firm's fault, but it feels like a PR move to fire the PR firm to hire a new one. To blame someone for the fact that public support for you has been pretty thin. It looks like she did this before
she took the stand.
So God help the new firm that she shouldn't laugh. It's so awful.
Well, so I think what people are saying that in the court of public opinion, he has already like slayed. However, I watched her.
Same.
And I was like, yep, I have been there with dealing with relationship dudes in relationships where I've gotten gaslighted similarly to the way it sounds like she was getting gaslighted. Now, I've never had a physical, you know, altercation the way that she claims that she did. So I was sort of like, huh, you know, I can understand where she's coming from. But then after that, I listened to and saw all this stuff about how she's like a known like sociopath. Did you see the whole video of James Franco like sneaking in the elevator, and they were like going up, like she was cheating on Johnny Depp too throughout all of this. So maybe she was gaslighting him and trying to make him think he was crazy. It's probably just a case of two like narcissistic, drug addicted, alcohol abusing people, celebrities who are just going at it. I don't know that anybody could help with PR on that.
I mean, it was so well put, I don't even know what else to say. It reads to me so far like the ultimately super weird codependent relationship of people that were just had the most toxic combination possible, but equally contributed to the toxicity, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It didn't read to me like, but I mean, of course, I'm not on the jury and I'm no legal expert. But
the
still.
Thing that's interesting to me is that the Me Too movement was so strong in favor of women, like without a doubt, right? Without even, nobody even cared what the guy's side of the story was, except this one. And why is that?
I mean, I think that there might be sort of a swing back to giving men a voice. And if you make it too easy that anytime any woman says something happened, you accept her word over his, that doesn't quite seem fair, does it?
But do you think that it's just because it's time, it's been too long, or is it because of him? Is it specific to him? If it was a different actor, would we be dealing with the same support for him? I feel like with Johnny Depp, it's like all these women want to like, they want to hold Johnny Depp and tell him it's okay. Like that he's like this sort of, you know, lost like artistic soul or something. And like women love to save those types.
I mean, I don't know if it's so much that as like she pooped on his bed. Like, I mean, that's like, how do you defend that? That's so weird.
No, people are not supporting, let's say, Marilyn Manson. They think he's horrible. I mean, a lot of his fans are probably like, meh. But I think more people are like, wow, Marilyn Manson's a horrible guy. Nobody's really going after Johnny Depp that way. I feel like there's something about Johnny Depp that
he just has the magic spell.
And you're saying that you think it's actually Amber Heard that's making people be like, enough with her.
It's almost like she's taking it so far and looking so fake and doing such crazy things and blaming him that it's almost undermining the credibility of women who are in these situations.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder what other like Me Too women are probably like, oh, please don't.
I mean, it's sort of painting a bad light over all of it. I think that's where it goes back to what you,
I want to try to bring this back to PR. And so it's kind of like what you said about clients saying to you, well, we want to get on Oprah. Why can't we get on Oprah? And you say, well, you need these three elements to get on Oprah. I feel like for PR with this, she's saying, to the PR firm, why aren't you like, you know, smearing his name? Why aren't you talking about all this horrible stuff? And they're saying, well, we need some evidence to prove photos, phone calls, emails, medical records to prove that this actually happened. And then, of course, we can do that. Yeah. And she doesn't have that. So that's why it's not taking hold.
Well, no. And there are these moments where it looks like she's posing. There was one where she posed with a handkerchief.
For the camera.
Yeah. So it's like, she's not helping her cause either. She's literally doing photo ops.
It's inorganic.
And she's looking at a couple of times she looked at the jury to see how they were responding. Right. And she's like, oh, I should cry some more. And then she looked again and then she kept crying. It was like, you do know we can see you doing that, right? Like, you can see that you looked at the jury to gauge whether you needed to keep being a crying actress.
So if you don't follow the advice of your PR people and then it backfires on you, you can't blame your PR people. I mean, I don't know what advice they're giving her, but
I don't either. And at the same time, is it a PR person's job to prep her for the stand?
No, it's the lawyer.
Right. So it's like, so you're blaming the PR firm. I mean, in this case, it was prior to her taking the stand. But if she had done it again, it'd be like, it's kind of on your lawyer and you to make sure that the read is authentic. They're supposed to drill, you know.
So really all the PR firm could do before she took the stand is work to discredit him.
Yeah.
So it's almost like doing like anti-PR. Like they're not doing PR for their client. They're doing PR against their client's adversary. Mm-hmm. So I haven't ever done that kind of thing. That may be a thing that's done in entertainment PR or whatever.
Oh, it's definitely done, but it's not something I do.
It's not my jam. So I guess I can't really talk about what they should have or shouldn't have done, or did it work or did it not work?
Yeah.
But I will say, if they don't have the photos, the logs, the whatever, to be able to deliver news to the press, then it's very hard to just be like, hey, he stinks.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Should we move on?
Yeah, what's our other? Oh, the other one was what? Ulta Cosmetics.
Apologizing for the insensitive Kate Spade email.
Yeah.
So do you want me to explain, or do you want to explain to the listeners what happened?
I'm going
to
make you
explain. So Ulta Beauty is facing significant backlash after sending out an insensitive email promoting its Kate Spade perfume, alluding to the designer's suicide. I'm hoping they didn't intentionally allude to the designer's suicide, but that's how this is phrased. So they sent out an ad on Sunday promoting a new Kate Spade perfume, telling customers to, quote, come hang with Kate Spade, while announcing new discounts. Advertisement was quickly called out for its poor choice of wording and even poor timing, as designer Kate Spade died by suicide when she hanged herself in 2018, and May is acknowledged as Mental Health Awareness Month. And then the company sent out an apology, saying, in an email we recently sent featuring the Kate Spade New York brand of fragrances, a very insensitive choice of words was used, and for that we are very sorry. We have the utmost respect for the Kate Spade brand and the joy it brings to the beauty and fashion industries at Ulta Beauty. Our teams are human, and this was truly an error with no intent to do harm. It's a well put
apology.
And then they said, we're keenly aware that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Mental health is a very serious, important issue in this country, not something we'd ever take lightly. We're working internally to ensure something like this never happens again. So, I mean, I can't imagine somebody did that on purpose. I really can't.
I agree. I think that it was just complete. Nobody saw it for whatever reason.
Nobody
I would have seen it.
It.
I would have seen it immediately. But
it might have been somebody who didn't even know what happened with
Kate
Spade.
Might have been some 23, right? Like young people who like don't, whatever. Or like, old people who don't know. But whatever. I would have been like, oh, wait, are we really saying that? I also happen to work with a lot of mental health clients, so I also know that it's Mental Health Month.
Well,
but anyway.
Culturally aware.
Which you would hope that like Kate Spade, people who work for a big brand like that would be too, but you know, you miss some. And they miss that. But I also want to say that I think that the apology was incredibly well conceived and delivered. And I don't think it should harm, I'm guessing it's not going to harm Ulta or Kate Spade or whatever.
I don't think so. I don't think it'll stick. I mean, it's so dark and so clearly an accident in my mind anyway, that I don't.
It wasn't somebody like using it as a joke or fodder. You know, I think it purely was an accident.
I don't think so.
And what you have to do is come out immediately and apologize. Fully.
Yeah, and their apology was great.
Yeah. So I think that this is a good case study of how to handle like a horrific situation that nobody could have foreseen.
Yeah.
By using the apologize organically and fully and as fast as you can.
Yeah. A+ on the response. F on what happened, but like everyone's human, we are all going to flunk a couple times, you know?
Yep.
I guess the only other lesson there is just make sure you have checks and balances in place and proofreaders for everything. If you have somebody that's culturally sensitive, maybe, or culturally aware, make sure that they're part of the mix of reviewing things.
Right. You should probably run these things by PR firm, because PR firms.
Tend to be plugged in. And, you know, doesn't have to be PR firm, but somebody that is going to be able to do a quick gut check on, is this going to get us canceled, or is this going to, you know, hit a nerve somewhere?
Cultural attaché.
Yeah, exactly. Like Laura.
I'm only if it was something like happened in like the 80s to like the early 90s.
Right.
I rarely know what's going on. I'm like, what?
You ready for the horror story of the day, Laura?
I think so.
Okay. Hi, April and Laura. This is a two-parter, so buckle up. Part one. I worked at an agency 2 years ago that was, in short, total BS. They advertised themselves as being an award-winning agency with services like social media, reputation management, digital content, and, of course, media relations. They had sexy branding, huge growth plans, big price tags, everything else that made me think, oh, I want to work there. Enough that I filled out an application and went through a nutty, complicated hiring process. I proved my chops, started working as a senior account exec, and realized pretty fast that they were full of hot garbage at this place. They were basically a blast pitching spam factory with clients that burned hot and bright and then quit fast. Sometimes they tapped into personal connections to land big placements for expensive clients, but mostly the placements were either pay for play or totally irrelevant for the clients. Anyway, I knew enough to see through the shit, pardon my French, and I quit. A lot of my former colleagues really dug into their, quote, love for that place. I think because it was so hard to get in and that people with more pride than me might feel stupid to quit after such a royal hazing.
Do you want me to read part two?
Yeah.
Part two. Fast forward to today. I'm in-house. I like my job and I've been here for a year and a half. You know, after I quit PR and Co. It's a small startup company, but a legit one, and we're growing. Anyway, I'm on the marketing media team, and one of the head honchos here just announced this huge, exciting news. I know it's coming. Do you know? I know it's coming.
Yep, yep.
They're going to hire PR and Co. Where her long-term boyfriend works and is loving it.
Oh my God.
I'm dying to tell my boss that this place is a total load and a waste of our hard-earned funds, but I don't feel like I have the clout here to tell a senior leader that their boyfriend's new company is crap. What should I do? Oh my God.
Oh my God. Wait, so is this person doing PR in-house, I'm assuming?
Marketing and media team.
So does that mean that they actually have to interact with PR and Co? It must, right? So if so, wouldn't they have a say in this?
Right, we don't have specifics. So I'm going to read a little bit between the lines. I have a feeling that this person may not be managing the agency, but may end up having to work with them or touch them at some point, right?
I mean...
And the head honcho's boyfriend works there and is loving it. I don't think you say anything.
I don't think you do either.
If you like your in-house job, which this person seems to like their new in-house job,
they're going to figure it out. Win, they're going right? to figure it out.
You're going to just be the evil messenger and it's going to be bad for you. Just hang in there and they will figure it out. Yeah. And along the way, you can be like, yeah, you know... And it's interesting to me if that PR firm doesn't say anything about, oh, we used to work with, you know, Susie Q. She used to work for us. But I don't think you want to be the one to announce that. Let it all play out.
I think Lana, our chief client officer, has a policy for just like, if she realizes that it's not her place to say something, she just lets it play out. She's like, yeah, I already know what's going to happen here. This is just going to, it's going to run its course, and then person A will realize person B is full of it, or you know, that kind of thing. And I think that's the wisest thing to do. If you really can't bite your tongue, the only other thing I think you could do is say, oh sure, I know PR and Co, I worked there once, and don't say it with a positive tone,
right? Or like, just say it flat, no editorial,
because no editorial tells them everything.
Yep.
But don't smash the company. Don't slander them. Just, oh yeah, yeah, I know them. I work there.
Yeah.
And then if they ask a question, then you could politely say, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of their approach. I didn't think it was effective because it
wasn't strategic or
XYZ, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't strategic. In my mind, it didn't, you know, it wasn't the most strategic firm, but I completely respect that you have a connection there and you want to explore it.
Right. And maybe the people that we'll be working with will do a great job. So we'll see.
Right. I don't know this team. Could be.
And
great.
That's true. A lot of times, like certain people or a team at a certain agency can do way better than, like, you know,
the other team.
Right.
So I think that's the most you could do. Mm-hmm. And obviously, other than that, I'm not a huge fan of unsolicited advice.
Yeah.
Or feedback. If people ask, sure, tell them. But yeah. I'm not a big fan of just offering up your opinions when they're not sought.
Right. Just to be like, I know, or, you know, I'm the whatever, because it'll be worse for you anyway. Believe me, it will be better if you just let it play out, because the worst thing that happens is that it actually plays out okay.
Yeah.
And then everybody wins.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It probably won't, and then it'll all play itself out in the end anyway. And this is the way this is what happens in business, right?
Yep.
We've talked about it before, so.
Yep. 100%. So before we sign off, Laura, are there any latest and greatest products that are rocking your world that you want to share for our Sponsor Us segment?
I just buy food all the time.
Do you have a favorite brand, food brand?
No, I've been buying a lot of Playa bowls, the acai bowls. I think it's the tropical bowl. Oh, it's so good.
Wait, why are you buying a bunch of acai bowls?
Because they're just really good. And there's a lot of fruit in them.
Oh, are you still on your like fruit diet?
No, unfortunately, I'm a monster. But I like that stuff. And I try.
Monster.
I try to eat more fruits and vegetables. But it's not exactly like just eating raw fruit. You know what I mean?
I see.
So good. Yeah, that's what I've been eating a lot of.
And is it a specific brand of acai bowl that you're getting?
I think the place is called Playa Bowls.
All they do is acai bowls.
Yeah, they do like other things like, you know, smoothies and some oatmeal and some other types of bowls.
But it's not a grocery item. It's a retail store.
Like you find it at the mall, right? But it happens
like
to be on
Pinkberry.
Broadway.
Okay.
Correct. It makes me so happy.
So wait, let's find out exactly what they're called so that we can invite them to sponsor us. I'm looking. I'm Googling.
Strawberries and blueberries. And instead of honey, I have them put peanut butter in it. So it's like protein, granola. It's lovely.
Playa bowls. Okay. Where are they? Let's see. Are they only in New York and New Jersey? I'm looking. One moment, please. Let's find out. 140 stores, more than 140 stores. They began as a pair of blenders, patio table, and a fridge that has flourished into over 140 stores, thousands of employees, and a mission to lead communities in healthy, sustainable living.
Does it say what geographies besides New York and New Jersey?
One moment, please. Let's see. We have to do it on Google Maps. You'd think they'd have that on their website.
Mm.
We could help with that. Franchise. Find your pliables. Okay, locations. One moment, please. Oh, they do look good. Well, it's like very fancy fruit.
Mm-hmm.
116 in the tri-state area.
Oh, so it is mostly in the New York.
Seven in Alabama, Georgia, 6 in Florida, 2 in Louisiana, and 3 in Colorado. How about that? Okay. Well, I like it. I wonder if they have a PR firm. Thank you so much for tuning in for another PR Wind Down podcast.
And thank you to David for joining us for an enlightening interview.
Remember to submit your own agency stories and questions and share our show with your friends and colleagues. If you subscribe and leave us a rating, you will help us reach new listeners like you.
And if you have an anonymous PR horror story of your own, please send it our way at the contact email below the episode notes.
Can't wait to wind down with you again next time.
And interacted with. That's.
Why is that happening? Still doing it?
It's Space Invaders.
I don't understand. Hold on.
It's Space Invaders.
It sounded like it.
I don't understand how this is happening.
Are you
better?
Are you playing a video game? Yeah, you're all good.
No, definitely not playing a video game. Nobody in the house is playing a video game.
It's a ghost
unless
in the
one,
machine.
Unless one of the cats is doing it.
Oh, you know it's a cat upstairs. Like,
but he put his arm on me right when I said that.
Oh.
He's playing a video game. No, he's not. He's just laying here purring.